One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this episode is another episode of the Clone Wars Report. Listen to those intrepid reporters typing up the news. That is exactly the kind of thing that would happen on the Clone Wars animated show as some sort of a space typewriters, right?
Right, yeah. Space Woodward and Space Bernstein. We need them now more than ever.
That is right. They are exposing the truth behind the scenes. Some strange meeting in a space parking garage in the lower levels of Coruscant. I am Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is, of course...
Cadnapsock, happy to be with all of you reviewing the Clone Wars.
That's right. If you're just tuning in for the first time, for some wonderful reason, we are going through the Clone Wars animated series and discussing each episode or arc of episodes if they are connected, like the episodes we're doing today. We're going through in chronological order, in the order that this all historically happened in that galaxy far, far away. The episodes we're discussing this episode are Downfall of a Droid, which is season 1, episode 6, and Duel of the Droids, which is season 1, episode 7. Let's dig in as we always do with a little bit of a summary. This is two episodes that really deal with Anakin's connection to R2-D2 and his burgeoning mentorship of Ahsoka Tano. R2 is lost in battle and is replaced by a sneaky, sneaky spy droid. And Anakin goes through various levels of emotional upset and rule breaking and rule following in his desperate attempt to reconnect with R2, which, spoiler, does indeed happen. That's my summary. Maybe not my best summary ever, but there you go. Want to dive into the morals of the episode, Ken?
Well, first of all, I want you to give yourself credit for a good summary. even as I'm listening, I have my notes. I watched both episodes twice minutes before we recorded. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point. So that's a good summary.
Okay, good summary. Good summary. We're going to move on to the morals. I always love the morals at the beginning of the Clone Wars episodes because, like I said, I believe our last episode, sometimes I'm like, damn, that is like punch in the gut meaningful. And other times I'm like, not sure. Want to wrestle with that. So the morals of these two episodes, the first one, Downfall of a Droid, is trust in your friends and they'll have reason to trust in you. And the one for Duel of the Droids is you hold on to friends by keeping your heart a little softer than your head. what's your gut reaction to both of these morals, Ken?
I really did love them, but we'll talk about my overall reaction to the episode and some trepidations I had going into it, which is fun to discuss for me. But these morals, I really like both of them because that second one, you hold on your friends, but keeping your heart a little softer than your head. It seems like nothing I've ever read in Star Wars before in terms of morals or opening crawls even, but it's totally perfect if that makes sense. It just seems like something your grandma would say.
Yeah, it is a real like nice grandma thing. I don't know if this is, you know, totally dating me, but was that a Traveling Wilburys song exactly? It's just so like late period Bob Dylan, George Harrison.
Put down some Jeff Lynne rhythm guitar there. You hold on to your friends, keeping your heart a little softer than your head. Yeah, that was off Traveling Wilburys Volume 4. That never
Volume 4. It's a real deep cut. Yeah, I think there's something about just the phrasing of it does not sound super stereotypically Star Wars, but the actual theme of it is that idea that, yeah, you can't get too rigid and be just so leading with rules and thoughts and specificity, but you have to be open to letting your friends be a little bit imperfect or leaning more towards emotions and intuition than tactics. All that stuff, all these great Star Wars ideas are in that, but the phrasing of it is super strange. How did you feel about trust in your friends and they'll have reason to trust in you?
I mean, I really do love it. It's one of those ones when you start looking at your regular life, your real life, your non-Star Wars life and go, yeah, that really works. But there are those times where you give them their trust and they destroy it. Oh boy, what are we doing with that? You know, but that's the morals don't account for every little minute detail of our lives and they serve as a good guide. And this one really worked. And I thought there were some interesting things in this episode that go back to these morals and sometimes communicate directly with them and sometimes challenge them or make you think of how they apply. And so that's why these episodes end up being really, really good rewatch.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what I am fascinated with, particularly early on in the Clone Wars, with Anakin in particular, is there's a lot of struggle back and forth about Anakin's choices. And, you know, all these Clone Wars episodes being sort of overshadowed, if you've, you know, already watched the prequel trilogy, that we know some of his critical flaws that are going to cause his fall. We know, you know, the original trilogy, how some of those flaws get commented on. And these early episodes in particular, I feel like really wrestle with, well, there's some good and there's some bad to the things that Anakin is doing. And I feel like these morals really, really attach to that. Because obviously trust, you have to give trust to receive trust is a great moral. Don't always be overly rigid and analytical. Sometimes you need to be close to your friends by being warm and open and emotional. Those are all like great ideas. But then within these episodes, there are moments where, oh yeah, no, trust and friendship didn't work out at all.
yeah, this is, yeah, I thought a lot about that. Trust your friends and love reason or trusted you. Yeah, I thought a lot about that this morning over a cup of coffee.
Yeah, and it almost seems like maybe the moral is also saying trust in your friends, and then if they don't trust you back at all, maybe they're a spy.
Yes, I thought about that too.
Yeah, all right, let's get.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I thought Anakin was being a bit of an a-hole early on, and maybe he was, but there's some truth to it. Yeah, weird stuff. Good stuff.
Weird and good stuff. So let's talk about overall reaction. Did you love it, like it, struggle with it? What's your relationship with this 2-episode arc?
That's a good way to phrase that question. What's my relationship with it? I, for the first time in our rewatch so far, had to, quote, gear up to watch it. Like, a droid episode. And that's me. That is Ken. I am oddly just never too into droid episodes. And I've talked about how I don't, even though I love BB-8. I've grown to appreciate and love Chopper. 3PO, obviously. And I think Rise of Skywalker is some of the best 3PO stuff. I could list all the things I love about droids in Star Wars. I don't collect a lot of them. I see them released. Cool, a probot, which I guess I'm more aligned with Obi-Wan on droids than I would care to admit. And I don't think that's necessarily right. So I approach it, Joseph, like, all right, let me get through like a droid episode. And clearly it's much more with that. And I also discovered with the pressure off of the episode, so to speak, and Clone Wars, I didn't watch in a weekly must go review on a YouTube show. Or, podcast until season 7 for us with Force Center. With no pressure on it, to just sit back and watch an episode with a veggie burger I made for myself and some delicious home fry potatoes I made for myself. I'm learning things, Joseph. And to sit there, watch this. It just, I had a lot of just joy came over me about, again, I really love this stuff. And to put that wall up because you think the episode is something or you think you don't connect to something. I still don't think I'd connect directly to droids, but to hear their stories and watch their stories and recognize their contributions to this story that I love engaging with, it ended up being rewarding again for me.
Oh, that's great. So you feel like you got more out of it by just sort of sitting back with your home-cooked meal and just being a fan and watching it as Star Wars. So you watched it with your heart, not your head.
Aha, yes. And I think at Force Center, as deep and analytical as we are and can get, I think it always comes from our heart, and our heart leads the way. And that's been, again, part of the fun of this rewatch. But again, these episodes, I can't stress enough how much I just see Magic Droid Day Out, that Meeber Gascon one, that's why it's a challenge. And I'm waiting to get back to that. I want to see what my thoughts are now. It's just a thing for me. But step one complete, I enjoyed these.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes if the droid challenge is not so much the droids themselves, but it's that we like other parts of Star Wars so much. We want the, the lightsabers and the bounty hunters. So it's more like, I don't dislike grapes in particular, but I would rather eat all the other things on my plate first.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for myself, these episodes, I like them. I don't think they are my absolute favorite of Clone Wars by any means. Many episodes, I will call several arcs my very favorite. I will be very inconsistent about what my favorite is because it's a long list. But these, I really like them. I like that it is this kind of, you can watch it on the surface and just go like, oh, this is a big adventure. We got some lightsaber fights. We got a lot of, space battles. We got a lot going on. We got droid fights. We got it all. But it's this big blow up adventure, which when you really break down the actual plot is an espionage plot. It's all about who knows what, when, and who has the information that the other person doesn't have. And I also like it that it is really both advancing Anakin and Ahsoka. It is definitely playing with all these ideas of what are we going to say about Anakin's recklessness, about his attachment, about his great love and friendship? How are we going to wrestle with all that in this Clone Wars animated series? It's definitely doing that. But it's also, you watch it in order. These episodes are a big step forward for how Ahsoka is going to function, how reckless is she going to be, what is her skill level at, and how does she handle it? Like the knowledge that she needs to stand up to Grievous, but the knowledge of like, I'm not there yet. I'm a relatively young Padawan. I can't take it to Grievous. I'm not going to defeat him. So there's a lot going on with Ahsoka. And then the other big overall emotional reaction that I had sitting down to rewatch is the loss of R2 in the replacement with R3 is truly upsetting to me. Like, how much R3 is just, we know R2 is this, like, just absolutely full of personality, full of talent droid. And then he gets replaced by this vaguely similar droid who's just crap. And then we learn is a traitor. And it's not in like upsetting to me in this like sad way of like Anakin lost his droid, the way you know, be sad to watch a show where a kid loses their puppy. It has that level of sadness, but it also has that existential dread. Like, you know, if I turned on my computer to do an episode of Force Center with you and somebody said, well, Ken isn't here today, but we have another guy named Ken. He's around the same age and he likes Star Wars too. Like, there's this kind of like, but that's not what makes it special. That those surface level similarities are not what makes the thing the thing. Gets to this like deep existential creep level for me.
Yeah, no. This whole episode really drives on the fact that R2 just might be the most important character in Star Wars. you know, our friend Mark Ellis calls him the hero of heroes, and I do want to talk later on about R2 being the droid who knew too much, something I've talked about and written about before, but the look on Anakin's face, yeah, I'm feeling it. It's I don't want to say lost puppy because R2 to me, you know, is more of a human character than a puppy, though I love my dogs, as you all know. But yeah, it is sad. It's dreadful to watch Anakin go through that.
Yeah, like we could just get another, right? I mean, it'll be fine. I mean, yeah, R2 was good at a couple things. Like, yeah, it's that part of it is really, really upsetting. And then, of course, the whole, you know, spy thing and the constant almost death. Like, you know, the great reminder of how important the astromechs are. You know, and it's like a if you had a coffee maker on the fritz, but it's life or death. You know. Truly terrifying.
Talk to you about some of that Obi-Wan stuff.
Oh yeah, I know. I struggle with it in a good way. In a way we're meant to struggle with. But let's get into some of the like big themes. What ideas are at stake for you in this 2-episode arc?
So I'll go this direction. The big one we talk about often because it's Anakin and it's just plainly said, but the balance of attachment versus letting go is a big theme, and then we know to me what's at stake, and attachment is not acceptable for a Jedi. There's Obi-Wan again, and I don't think he's wrong, but what is that balance? And you got little Ahsoka, as Plo Koon would say, little Ahsoka sitting there just kind of learning all this, and to know where she goes and where she find how she finds that balance is interesting for me to watch her kind of learn or even just experience all this at the foot of Anakin, and how Anakin not wiping R2's memory is a fun little canon attachment too. We can talk about that. It's just from now a strategic point, like we need the droid, but just what it says about Anakin's attachments. He so values these attachments, right and wrong, that he goes against protocol because he wants his little buddy around. And that's on the surface, something really good. Deeper, it might be. Clearly, we know it leads to more problems, but now it's led to these problems for the Republic. So, to me, there's some of the big stuff there. And then we'll dive into it. But the two-edged sword of trust in R2, and then the R3 S6 of it all. Is it S7 or S6?
Yeah, R3 S6, also known as Goldie and Stubby.
Goldie and Stubby. So, and then I want to, you know. We're talking in the second episode, I'm just putting it all on the table here.
Yeah.
I'm putting my Uno cards down. We can shuffle in a bit here. I want to draw fours. But how the second episode, actually all of it with Anakin going off to save his friend, essentially, and how this aligns, challenges, and maybe even emboldens Luke running off to save his friends in Empire. It's... speaks to that moment to me in all kinds of ways, you know, and I'd love to dive into them.
Oh yeah, no, I think that's great. No, I think we're very much in alignment with our Uno cards. I think the other big idea for me was just this sort of respect for the power of knowledge. It's one of the reasons that I really focused on. Yeah, there's a lot of big blow up, and there's a lot of action, and the emotional stories about Anakin's attachment and Ahsoka's growth and R2's value, but everything mechanically in the plot hinges around how much knowledge is valuable. There's the need to destroy that spy listening station that Grievous already knows what the Republic is going to do, because they have this great battle sphere that is actually a spy listening station. The reason that the Jedi and the Republic are fine with Anakin risking everything for R2 is because he has all this knowledge. He gets torn apart for what he knows, which is just like, you know, crunchy tactical stuff. The fact that R3 isn't just a crappy R2, but an actual spy that Grievous somehow managed to get into the center of the Republic's operation. There's so much where everything turns on knowledge, and not even just like deep esoteric wisdom, but just literally, what are your battle plans? What are the formations of your ship? You know, where do you redock and where do you fuel? All these things that are just basic information. The reason that's powerful to me, and I wanted to highlight it, is I think that many of us as fans can really get into the ship blowing up and the lightsaber slashes. And then those conversations quickly just become about power, about who is the most powerful. And this is an episode where it kind of doesn't matter, you know, who is more powerful between Grievous and Anakin, or who has a bigger gun, or who could beat each other. You know, it's all about who has knowledge, because knowledge is just as powerful as, you know, the ability to, you know, literally wield the Force or be better with a blaster or any of those things that we talk about more. These episodes really remind us that that stuff matters, but even more, it matters just taking the time and the intelligence to know what you know and know what your opponent knows.
Yeah, real chessboard kind of move here. Just not just to keep it on the surface of knowledge and war, but yeah. Of these characters scrambling for that territory called knowledge. Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that because it's definitely, you know, you talked about it being a spy thriller. There's all that kind of going on, and that's kind of usually what spy thrillers are about, right? Who knows what?
Yeah, like that is the most valuable thing. Like, yeah, not to take away from any of the flashy action stuff, and it does matter, but I do like that. In this more sort of Clone Wars that has this base of really trying to talk about a war and the strategy of it and bring that a little bit of that realism within this, you know, space wizards blowing each other up in space. a little bit of that realism that, you know, the only thing that really matters is who gets the drop on who because of knowledge. You know?
Well said indeed. And we'll talk about the action sequences. There were some really great ones here, absolutely great ones there, but all those mean nothing if you don't have the deeper stuff behind it, as we know here in Force Center. That's kind of why we dive in. But yeah, that kind of stuff kept coming into play in this episode.
Yeah, well, so let's go back to some. I wanted to share that Uno card. Let's go back to some of your Uno cards. Which, by the way, I love this metaphor. Let's talk about Anakin and attachment, because I think that's one of the big first thing you mentioned and one of the most powerful things. For me, I felt like what these episodes were wrestling with is the nature of not just attachment in general, because I feel like we know that story from the prequels that Anakin's attachment eventually becomes a selfish kind of attachment where he can't bear the thought of losing Padme, and that fear of what will it do to me if I lose her, I can't live without her, is what makes him make bad choices. And then I think, to your point, Luke is dancing on the edge of that when he goes to Dagobah, of just, well, they're my friends. I can't let them die because what will it do to me? But then by the time we get to Return of the Jedi, there is so much celebration of the pure part of attachment where you are selflessly saying, I'm willing to risk my life because I want my friend to live because it is good for them to live, not because I'm afraid of what will happen to me. You get, you know, everybody going to rescue Han and Han being blown away by that because he hasn't really been felt that before. And you get Luke relying on his compassion and his belief in his father to make better choices and to reach out to his father and on. So I feel like the story of Star Wars has its relationship with, here's the dangers of attachment when it's selfish. Here are the great parts of attachment when it's when it's selfless and kind. And I feel like these episodes are really asking us to almost go beat by beat and go, well, when were beats where Anakin was being like, no, hey, Obi-Wan, you're wrong. Droids have personalities. They are they're sentient beings and they deserve our respect. And I wouldn't let, I wouldn't just go, oh, Obi-Wan, you died, so I'll get another Jedi friend.
Yeah.
It asks you to make that argument. But then there's also moments where Anakin is losing people because he's being reckless or obsessive, or he's putting, I think, other people in danger because he's focusing only on, I can't lose R2. So thanks for enduring my ramble about attachment there. But where do you see, what do you think these episodes are saying about when Anakin is being, is practicing a sort of beautiful, selfless attachment of friendship, and when he's practicing a selfish attachment of fear of loss?
Well, first of all, you dropped a Uno card reverse on me a little while back. You were reversing back to my my themes. So I'm going to answer your question by actually going to the Empire and Return of the Jedi moments and connecting it. Just to, you know, you laid it out well, and this is one of the things where I'm like, I love that you said go beat by beat, because I don't know the clear answer sometimes, and I love the ellipses on the end of this thought here. I go to Luke on Dagobah at Empire Strikes Back. He's running off for fear, right? He's got a vision that may or may not be true. Yoda kind of says that. Always in motion, the future is, right? Doesn't, and then, so it's out of fear. It's out of fear. And it could be argued that, yeah, why he did maybe help them escape or save them? I don't know. Things didn't end well in Empire.
It did not go the way he thought it was going to go.
No. And that came out of a different motivation, where in Return of the Jedi, him sitting down with Leia, there's no fear in that conversation with me. It's him, destiny taking him to this point. He's choosing to go this direction. It's coming out of, like you say, compassion. And so there's the two examples of it, that it's easy to confuse the two and to, you know, take different meanings from them, I guess, as a fan, just watching and trying to learn, and knowing that, again, going to what we're talking about, the opening theme, this trust and all this, and friends and all this, it can't necessarily directly be applied to every moment. You kind of have to, not, like you said, not be rigid and go with your heart and see where your heart goes. So anyways, I start there with Luke, because that's just simply for me. Fear, compassion, confidence, strength, the two different ways. And Anakin has that. And I think the droid thing, I think R2, take the strategy thing aside too. There's some urgency in needing to get R2 because of the plans. I wouldn't describe it as fear, but there is kind of Anakin going, yeah, I may have, not deleted anything off his hard drive.
Legitimate practical concern.
Yeah. I wouldn't call that one fear, but yeah, along the way, I mean, there's a panic behind some of Anakin's moments. And that's where I look, where it's the roadmap for what comes before, going to the Padme thing, the dreams, the visions. What came first, the chicken or the egg, the dreams or the reality with Anakin? That's the big question. I still think he drove some of the stuff forward. And in the end, right or wrong, if we agree in terms of just a plot point or seeing it on screen, what Padme's ending comes from Anakin, not from what was going to happen. It comes from him. So, yeah, going back to this episode, I'm really far off the path here, I know, but just...
No, not at all.
Going back at each moment, you can see where strength, compassion, a real drive to do the right thing versus, oh, dear God, I got to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of what you're saying is great. I think also for the Empire moment, it's always important to remember that, you know, Yoda and Obi-Wan just straight up tell Luke of, like, your friends are being made to suffer because the Emperor and Vader want your power. Like, they're doing this to your friends so that you will come. So, like, you're giving them exactly what they want, you know?
Yeah.
I think, which plays into, you know, why it does feel like in error, you know, in that respect when he goes after them, or, you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Anyway, I think for this episode, what I really liked is I feel like there is these layers of moral arguments, and I will agree with the sadly disagree with my beloved Obi-Wan Kenobi. I think it's a great character trait that he's just like, droids are like, they're not fully sentient like us. They're, you know, he's got that line Attack of the Clones, like, if they could think, we'd all be dead. He seems like him perfectly fine and want to be nice to him, but it's like he's got a little bit of a dividing line. And I feel like there is this moral clarity where Obi-Wan is like, or Anakin rather, is like, no, I grew up kind of around machinery. I like putting things together. I see the humanity in underdogs. I see the humanity in the clones. I see the humanity in the droids really clearly. And it's really admirable. And I think sort of morally correct that R2 is just as valuable, just as sentient as, you know, Plo Koon or anybody else in the galaxy. But then the way Anakin proceeds with that, I feel like he is trying to tell himself that is why he's doing things, because of this great moral clarity. But I see him causing bad things by obsessiveness, recklessness, and justifying all of his choices because he can't lose R2. And I feel like he's, at the beginning, he goes after Grievous. He's determined to catch him. The piece of machinery hits the ship and he's just like, R2, can you fix that? And like, he could have stopped. He could have let go of that obsessiveness. But like, the, you know, he says, I got a bad feeling about this, when there's right. something clearly wrong. So good job having a bad feeling about the ship about to explode. And then, so I feel like he's a little culpable in the loss of R2. It's not totally random. It's because he's being obsessive and reckless in his wanting to end Grievous. And then I feel like when he says, well, you know, I haven't wiped them. You know, I think that we can extrapolate to, well, why not? Well, you know, R2 is this bridge between himself and Padme. He just recently lost his mother and he's still coping with that. He doesn't want to lose, you know, this friend. You know, Ahsoka kind of props up that decision with like, well, actually, it's really valuable that he has, you know, knows so much and has developed so much, which I think is, again, a good argument, but it's not coming from Anakin. It's coming right. from Ahsoka. And then, you know, he clings to this like, well, there's the danger of his sharing the data, so I have to go after him. And then even as he's going to that Separatist battle sphere to rescue R2, you know, R2 does the heroic thing of R2 manages to escape and send out a beacon so they can find it. And Anakin, you know, I'm paraphrasing, says something along the lines of like, well, you know, R2 led us here. So, you know, I got to go in there and get him because he did such a good job. And like, he's saying these things that are, but it feels like in the way he says them of like, R2 did something heroic and it gave me more validation to do what I've wanted to do from the beginning is, at the cost of anything and everything, I'm going to rescue my friend because I can't live without him.
Mm. I want to go back to the very beginning of this story outline, how I think it's important to highlight that where does the attachment lesson begin for Anakin? It is, as you described, the pursuit of Grievous, right?
Yeah.
There are those moments. I think that can easily be overlooked when you're digging it, even if you're digging in a comment on not just what it means for Anakin, but us as well, because it's very, the pursuit of Grievous is probably a good thing.
You know, oh yeah.
A good place, but there is that specific kind of turn back moment. And here it is, another lesson for Anakin that ends up, I don't know, being okay. Right. So you're not going to learn the lesson as maybe you should, if you end up with your little droid pal and everything's A-okay. Lost some clones along the way. We're all right. But it's interesting to me that that's actually where the attachment lesson really does start.
Yeah. But I think if you just sort of like also just break down what happens, there's this overall moral that like, yes, friendship and trust is good. But a lot of that friendship and trust that leads to good things are the actions of R2, of Ahsoka, of the clones. When Anakin gets onto that battle sphere, he obsessively goes after R2. I think one could make an argument, he leaves his very young Padawan in an incredibly dangerous situation that she manages to get herself out of, which I definitely want to talk about the Ahsoka side of it in the second half of our podcast episode here. But you could read it as he puts Ahsoka in some danger, which is that trust or is that his obsession to get R2. And when he finally gets to the place where he's going to be able to get R2 back, he literally says the line, you have something that belongs to me, which could just be read as a, you know, hey, it's a good Jedi tough guy long line. But that it belongs to me speaks towards that I can't lose it. Mm. Not, it's not, you know, you put my friend in danger. It's right. not, you know, I need to be here for my friend. It's you took something from me and I'm taking it back, which speaks to that fear of loss.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Just ask the Tusken Raiders.
Exactly. Exactly. I guess maybe what in all our Uno shuffling, I think what I'm coming down to in this episode, which I really like because it's complex, is I feel like the morals of trust, you know, give trust, you will receive trust, that friendship is important. You can't always lead with military tactics and rigid thinking. Sometimes you have to lead with your heart. I feel like all those morals are correct and the overall situation benefits from all of those things being true. While Anakin himself is saying these things, but still moving in an obsessive, fearful way throughout all his actions.
Yeah, a slippery slope that, you know, the water's boiling and he ain't feeling it.
It's yeah.
Yeah. Anakin's the lobster, everybody.
Anakin's the lobster. That's what we came to. Wouldn't that be a weird moral? What other Uno cards do we still have on the deck for your themes? Because you had a lot of great ones.
The two-edged sword of trust, Anakin and R2 having mutual appreciation and trust there. But I'm a little fascinated by R3 showing up and Anakin kind of just being a jerk about it. Ahsoka being just warm and open-hearted about it, giving him the name Goldie, you know, and then where it ends up. I wouldn't want that to be misinterpreted as Anakin was right and Ahsoka was wrong. I think 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the other way around. So, one of those don't have the answers, but I just love what that presented to me too at the end of it. Because I'll tell you what, I had forgotten, having not seen this episode for years, I forgot R3 was a spy. So I was pleasantly surprised. Like, oh, that's right. That's right. I had some questions later on. I want to know why and how and all the stuff, kind of the surface stuff of how a droid infiltrated the Republic. It's interesting stuff there. I'm looking at you, Sheev, too. But yeah. But just, you know what I mean? Like, I it's a lesson for Ahsoka and one that I think down the line, I think maybe walls might go up, but she's always going to go towards the warm-hearted side of things, which is part of the second episode's theme here. So anyways, that's where my mind went next.
Yeah, no, I really love that because I love what it says about Ahsoka, particularly early on, that she is naturally thoughtful and kind and wants to trust people and droids, and even really manages to sort of thread this needle between the arguments of Obi-Wan and Anakin and get past their sort of binary back and forth that they're used to and see it from kind of both sides in a somewhat healthy way. Or pick out the emphasis that's important of like, yeah, but actually, you know, good or bad, R2 is really extra valuable because he does know all this stuff and he has grown and evolved so much. And that's really helpful on some missions that. But then with the trust thing, it's so pure and so great that she wants to be like, well, R2 was great, but maybe R3 will be too. But it feels like a lesson in, you know, when a droid tells you who they are 17 times, got to believe them a little bit. Like, it seems like it's a growth thing for her of like that instinct to be warm and kind and trusting is good, but you shouldn't trust that to the point where you put yourself in danger, which she literally does. Like it gets to that point where like, okay, R3 isn't just incompetent. R3 is making all the correct choices to get us killed at every step. And he keeps doing it. And she keeps going like, well, maybe next time he'll get it.
Yeah, I think it's she's young and naive, but in a good way, if that makes sense. Of just she's a painting being created, you know, and she'll end up being just this great piece of art for the Jedi to hang in a temple of. This is what we all could be here, if you follow that thread there. But I'm charmed by that that valuable lesson that almost took her life. You know, charmed.
Yeah.
Cyborg droid leader. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for actually kind of adding that layer to it of me of just like, you know, Ahsoka, you got it right. You got some lessons to learn though.
Yeah. Yeah. Some hard knock lessons about trust when that big glowing light comes on when R3 lights her up when she's trying to hide from Grievous is a great, great moment.
R3,
what are you doing? It's funny and it's also like really scary because Grievous is still, I think, you know, successfully scary and Ahsoka is, you know, still so young at this point that it's like, it's scary. Very effective. We already dipped into a little bit how the individual themes of this two-episode arc connects to a larger storytelling or morality or perspective in Star Wars. But did you have other thoughts on how these episodes kind of talk to the larger picture of Star Wars?
I think it connects to a little bit of what they're all fighting for and how they fight for it and what they're connected to. And I always look at the heart of the rebellion coming out of the ashes of the Republic. And I see a lot of that there's constant fighting for saving what we love. All that kind of connects to the bigger picture and just kind of the simple, mean, metallic separatist side of things. I just love that it's constantly at play here. Grievous treating his droids bad makes me chuckle and giggle, but also an indication of what the heart of that movement is, because you could easily go, well, some of the separatists weren't bad, you know, or, you know, New Gunray did want peace, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, to me, seeing that on display in the action in this episode connects to that bigger picture for me.
Yeah, no, that's powerful. Yeah, another battle droid head loss to a Grievous punch here in this early episode from the Clone Wars. There's a lot that because it was about to happen. I was like, he's going to do it, isn't it? He's gonna punch its head off. Yep. So a lot of droids lost their heads. Very, very sad in the Separatist. Yep. Separatist layers there with how many heads are lost. Another sort of big idea is just R2. This episode really, I feel like, because it's this very specific idea of like, oh, that's standard procedure to wipe your astromech's memory, if not entirely, to wipe its sort of tactical memory from each battle so it can't be used exactly the way that R2 is briefly used to steal that information. Mm-hmm. But that ties to that whole endless fun conversations of, well, R2's entire memory is never wiped. And when he's flying around with Luke, when you know, and Leia, and he knows all this stuff that he doesn't share, or maybe he does and nobody ever listens, and who knows? It's such a fun Star Wars fan conversation, the implications of R2 always knowing everything. And then also just that we get that Obi-Wan perspective that we talked about of him going like, yeah, well, R2's great, but come on, he's just a droid. And then you connect that back to A New Hope, and obviously A New Hope was filmed when it was filmed before all this storytelling was built up. But now that it's there and you just read it as text, and like, what is going on between Obi-Wan and R2 in A New Hope really connects to episodes like this, or like, you know, have they always just been a little chilly to each other?
First of all, how dare you suggest that Lucas didn't have a plan for all of his movies and stories while shooting them at any point in time. That's just ridiculous. But to me, it's one of those great wrinkles that's absolutely just comes from George going, this is the direction I'm going to take things. And I think this episode really, really, really ties back to that. I don't seem to ever recall owning a droid. And I still, to me, in my mind, now with all new information, when I saw it in the 80s, it wasn't this because it wasn't this. But now that it is, it all connects. It, to me, R2, I just think R2 is like, you jerk, what are you talking about? And some of those super cuts that are out there you can find on YouTube that are sometimes done, especially prior to Disney Star Wars, but they were done out of a snarkiness to just kind of make fun of it all. But those I don't seem to ever call owning a droid and then just super cut all the memory. So you could take that negatively. I take it as a fun positive thing. And just the subtext here, you know, like, just R2's got to know that back during this era, Obi-Wan's just like, I don't care about droids. And it tracks with everything you and I have talked often about, the little moments in the prequel movies where it just doesn't seem Obi-Wan quite cares about the droids. You talked about the other one. I think the P4 death and the R4 deaths are just, Obi-Wan just doesn't feel it as deep as maybe I would, you know.
Yeah.
I watched the Naboo escape when we first meet R2 and those other droids get blasted into space, and I get sad.
We're losing droids fast is one of the saddest lines in Star Wars.
Yeah. And you're like if every one of them is an R2 with that kind of spirit and personality, that makes me sad. So anyways, I think it connects on a fun level. This is actually a really fun connection. Then it just connects on a deeper level and doesn't necessarily make Obi-Wan a bad guy. It just, that's something that doesn't jive with him. Droids.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, just reading it just as the text, the way it reads now, and knowing that Obi-Wan, you know, probably recognizes R2. Maybe there's a lot of astromech droids, but that look exactly the same. But there's that, like, if R2 is saying, like, no, you take me to my master, Obi-Wan. And it's kind of a snarky thing for Obi-Wan to say back of, like, I didn't own you. I've never owned you. I've never owned a droid, actually. R4B17 was assigned to me.
Right. Right.
That it's just this kind of snarky, like, it's you again. It's always you. It's always going to be you. You are unstoppable. Of course it's you. I sit here for 19 years waiting for, you know, the will of the Force to tell me now is the time. And it's you. Of course it's you. And you're already lying. You're already selling, you know, Anakin's kid, you know, this bag of lies. All right. All right.
Yeah. I love that scene. I've talked often about just, you know, Sir Alec Guinness is such a good actor that he just, because he's got his own character's backstory in his mind, whatever it was at the time when they're shooting that. And some of it is, and probably comes from George and, you know, not the Anakin father stuff and everything, but just, he's such a good actor. He just leaves his eyes is recalling the histories. And I think you can do the job here when you're writing stories later on in the Star Wars time to connect to those beats in those moments. And I just, time and time again, I think we go back to that scene. There's just so much in Alec Guinness's eyes that are Obi-Wan's. And I got to imagine, just like you said, I'm fascinated with that, Joseph. Just, you know, while I recently killed Maul, I think something's going on. I'm sensing things. Oh, God, it's R2.
Of course it's R2 with a message from Leia. Here we go. Now is the time. The other thing I wanted to mention is just a small thing, but it's a thing that I have really been enjoying paying attention to for Lucas. He speaks about it in some of the great behind the scenes stuff early in the Clone Wars animated series development. And when you look for it in the prequels, it really pops how much to him. We talk about fear a lot. Is, you know, the path to the dark side. But Lucas has such a strong perspective on greed that greed is ultimately the problem with the Sith. They always want more. It's why there can't be balance. It's why there can't just be like, hey, 100 Sith, 100 Jedi balance, because the Sith will always try to take more. And I think the fact that he really wants to make a commentary on greed, that's why the entire prequel trilogy starts with this massive act of greed from the Trade Federation. So I always like looking for, like, how does this idea about greed play out? And the character of Ganacht is intriguing. And I love that it's just, there's more of that, like, this era of Lucas storytelling being, hey, greed's really bad. You know what happens when you get greedy? You die immediately, because it's the moment where Ganacht is like, turns out this droid is even more valuable, which means you should pay me more. Grievous just kills him. And it's like, you know, I don't think Lucas or Filoni were ever going to put that in as the moral of the episode on the beginning. But greed is death also does read as a moral to me.
It's a theme as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Instant death from greed. Any other thoughts before we take our break?
No. Looking forward to getting to some of these specific little details.
Yeah. Sounds great. We will be back in a moment to dive into details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Hey, 4Center fans, don't forget 4Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's 4Center on YouTube. Check it out.
And we are back here on the Clone Wars Report to dig into some of our favorite details from this two-episode arc. So, Ken, let's talk action. Did you have a favorite action moment?
Well, yes, sir, I did. I had a few. I'm going to start with the opening sequence of the first episode. We live in both worlds of Star Wars. We love deep. That look that Obi-Wan gives, that means this. That means that. I also love pew, 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 and I know, Joseph, you appreciate a good pew as well.
Indeed, I do.
Yeah, and the opening sequence is just really good. It's full of great action and a lot of, we sometimes joke about Thrawn and his turn the cannons 3 degrees to the port side type of approach and that kind of detail Star Wars. There's a lot of that in here that was at such a great fun pace that I was on board. Just the opening sequence is a good old space fight.
Yeah, no, and I love the actual cleverness of Anakin's tactic of having the tanks out there on the asteroids.
Oh, yeah, which is very Robotech-ish. So I like that, too.
Yeah, it's just I like it when a character comes up with a clever plan and then you can actually see that plan executed well. And it's just a great, cool, as you say, pew-pew visual as well.
Yeah, Love some Pew. Some Pew to the Pew to the Pew when it was there.
Yeah. What else you got for favorite action moments?
Episode 2, the freefall dive. Really good. Like, I love the Ahsoka one episode. Season 7 was really great, but I don't know. This one just had a fun vibe too, and it's underrated. Like, you kind of don't remember this in terms of a cool, let's all jump out of a ship and head down to where we got to go type of thing. Like, this one doesn't come up a lot in conversation, and so I wanted to highlight that as well.
Yeah, no, that's a great visual, and I had that has that great, like, okay, so she's just going to use the force to land, right? And then are the clones going to splatter or rockets or what? And it's fun to see those differences.
And then the final one for me, I'm sure you touch upon this kind of being a spy movie, but the 1960s spy movie music meets a rave score during R2's escape attempts and some of the other stuff. And then just the music overall, going back to that Mandalorian Disney Gallery episode where, like, they're talking about the music and Filoni, there's kind of a moment where I look back now, I think maybe even understand a little bit more. Where he's just kind of like, well, you know, George always said, you know, you could do a lot of experimental Star Wars music. It's not all just the big sweep and Williams score stuff. Even John himself, again, I'm paraphrasing Dave, but there was like this real kind of like this urgency and a little bit of it, what he was saying. And now I listened to this episode. I was like, oh, there's some Mando-like moments in the music here. I'm not saying Lars took Kevin Conner's work and copied or anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, it connects for me. It's, I didn't remember it being this stylized.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that moment a lot, and I think that Filoni believes that's a one of the elements of Star Wars where you can explore a little bit, but it also has a little bit of, like, I wonder how much guff on whatever, you know, Clone Wars forums back in the day that they took for this early parts of the Clone Wars animated series, which has even more experimentation than I remembered. Because, yes, I wrote down, like, yeah, I mean, that is like, you know, Moby remix of James Bond theme from, like, 1997, and, like, at one point, I'm just like, I have friends who go out and dance to that, or I did when people went out. But yeah, absolute, like, just, hey, R2's going to murder an IG droid to dance music. Was like, damn.
Yep. Let's bring in Fatboy Slim. Yes.
Yeah. And that was one of my favorite action moments, too, of R2 just dropping the other IG droid into space. Yeah. It's a great, you know, this is one of those moments that, you know, the show reminded you again and again of, like, no, R2 is that great. And that was a great action moment to remind you. I think for me, my other favorite action moments, there's a lot of great action, but they're both Ahsoka, because, again, this is an early episode. And I like that they want to remind us that Ahsoka is an extremely talented Padawan. She's a little bit younger, but she was, you know, became a Padawan. Because clearly she is very skilled, and it's fun to see that. So I also like how much the twilight is used, is this symbol of, Anakin and now his young Padawan Ahsoka kind of do things differently. They have this, you know, sort of off the records ship that they can use when they need to. And I love that scene of Ahsoka. It's just a great pew pew action scene too, of Ahsoka flying the twilight between the two separatist battle cruisers and, causing them to scrape together and, you know, pulling in the fins of the twilight and just doing great Jedi flying.
That was a great moment. Glad you highlighted that one. I kind of forgot about that one. I think I was probably looking down at my toast this morning when that one came up the first time I watched it this week. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many. And then I think for me, my favorite is the just fun terror of Ahsoka trying to keep up with Grievous and then having this very mature realization of, oh yeah, I'm not going to defeat him. I don't have the skills yet for that. So what I need to do is live. And having that wisdom and that skill to do that classic Jedi move and hack his hand off to escape. It was, again, like just a cool action move, but I felt it said so much about Ahsoka and how far she's already grown to have that maturity to go, like, I need to just live and focus on the mission, because the mission is not for me to stop Grievous right now and possibly get killed doing it. The mission is to blow up the base and hopefully get myself and all the other clones off first, and just, you know, all of that kind of symbolized by just hacking the hand off and getting out of there, and the clever, you know, the knocking things over and getting into the grate, all just kind of clever live to fight another day stuff from young Ahsoka.
Yeah, we're fortunate to have seven seasons of her journey. And in that way, you get to stop and see a little bit more of where she learned some things. In a movie, it's more compact and you just kind of got to get up and go. And the training is what it is. But if anyone would, you know, press record on their cameras to rant about Ahsoka and her abilities and who they think she should or should not defeat, I would look a moment like this. That's very realistic. She's a young Padawan against this monster, and she's got the great heart. But I love what you're saying. They're just like, not the mission. I can't do it. And it's not Jedi is always the hero that slashes their way to victory. Like it's different. And so that makes her victories and her fights have even more weight for me later on when she either does know it's time to fight or does get wins or anything like that. I love that. I love that journey there.
Yeah. Yeah. And continually provides this great contrast with Anakin, where she has all of the heart and the warmth and, you know, leads with her heart as much as her head, but is still manages to like stay focused on the mission.
Good Jedi,
that Ahsoka. What a revelation. Yeah. Ahsoka is a good Jedi who left the Jedi.
Learning so much in this Uno deck of Clone Wars.
Can't wait to see what other game decks we're going to be playing with as we review the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. Did you have a favorite moment of comedy or whimsy or weirdness?
Oh, sir, I did. We'll call this the Skip-Bo deck of cards, the card game that didn't catch on quite as much as Uno. I think this section of our Clone Wars report just keeps being the documentation of the ongoing plight of the battle droids. So after the potato asteroid hits Grievous's ship, which is a great little moment, I love it cuts back to the battle droid. He goes, that didn't sound good. I don't know. It's a real world joke. I could see it in some kind of other live action sitcom or something, but I just love it. And then pinning on that, just the whole sequence, I'll say that Grievous running away from everything is now becoming like my favorite comedy callback runner in all of Star Wars.
Right. I mean, you go back to that line in, I believe, Revenge of the Sith, where Mace Windu says he's a coward. He'll run as he always does. And then you could do a supercut.
Yeah.
Of all of Grievous's running away.
Which, again, and it goes, it's like the lighter version of we were talking about with Obi-Wan and not recalling owning a droid. You can create and write to that stuff. And that's when you hear Joseph and I talk about those connections, the emotional canon. That is also what I mean, too. Or you can get, don't overlook Mace's line. Don't overlook it, because now it fuels hours of entertainment for Ken.
Yeah. And you just keep seeing, oh, there's the soulless one. He's getting out of there.
His ship's the soulless one. He's got no soul, but he's also a coward. He's got no soul or backbone. He's running away. It works on me.
I must get to my ship, the spineless. Yeah.
Yeah. And the glee and the glee in which he runs away. Just kind of he's always giggling.
He's always giggling and he knows he's gonna be in trouble too, because he keeps, you know, it's so interesting that these first couple arcs are like Grievous is the big bad. In the telling of the war and this contest for the Outer Rim. And then eventually, you know, it expands from there. And Grievous constantly escaping and being like, you know, that's going to cost you, right?
Oh, it's the best. I just love it. It's become really funny. It's got meaning, but it's just really funny to me.
It is super funny. Yeah. It almost, you know, it could get to that great point of just exaggeration where just Anakin arrives and he's like, great, and gets in his ship and leaves. Yeah.
Love that.
Any other comedy moments for you?
Just some quick things that we're going to talk about, I'm sure, but and we already have. But Obi-Wan, R2 units are a dime a dozen. Like, damn, Obi-Wan. Like, wow. What are you doing there? I do like Anakin's missiles. I hate missiles. So, hey, he doesn't just hate sand. There's missiles as well. And then it ties a little bit to the Revenge of the Sith opening battle there over Coruscant. And then, yep, we got to talk about it in some way, even if just 5 seconds. The Trandoshan fart jokes, a Star Wars story. There's some, some Star Wars tradition as well. Burps and farts. George does love those in a Star Wars.
Burps and farts. And I will be really interested to as we proceed, because in my memory, a lot of this kind of humor, a lot of the much broader droids almost saying things that could be from a, you know, David Spade, Chris Farley movie, farts, burps, all that different things that do or do not smell good or bad. The kind of humor that is in the prequel trilogy and is geared towards a younger audience is really present in the first season, and I think dissipates a lot in later seasons of the Clone Wars. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the droid stuff might stay a bit too, but I'm curious to track that. Definitely gonna be looking for it. But it is. I mean, this is the don't drop this. Troy drops it.
Oh yeah, just the total trips it. Yeah, no, it is. It's like early on, this is like, these are essential ingredients of the Clone Wars era. You know, we must have some space battles, we must have lightsaber battles, we must have deep concerns about the nature of attachment. Is it selfish or selfless? Also, is there any way we can figure out a way to make a battle droid fart? Because that's also essential to this era of Star Wars storytelling.
We're working through it.
I mean, the Gonacht fart is, we almost have to ignore it because it's, I mean, sometimes people will say a joke is literally a little too in your face. And this is literally, he literally farts in their face as he's coming through a door, right? I mean, it's unignorable.
Well, especially because upon entering the ship, like, oh, what's that smell? You'll get used to it. So you're like, oh, I didn't, you know, Trandoshans maybe have a little bit of a distinct odor. It might be related to this. Okay. Okay. And maybe that's what they're known for. Maybe Bosk is like, excuse me. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's what Piet is so upset about in that data bit.
That's bounty hunter. We don't need that stink.
We don't need that farting scum. Yeah, so definitely some good choices. In terms of the battle droid humor for me, it is at once like too over the top, but it's so over the top that I kind of enjoy it. When the droids are talking, the two battle droids are talking about going up to some level to get some sort of battle droid massage. You get your head adjusted and then the head gets ripped off.
That's right.
It's so on the nose, but strangely delightful.
I think you could do a supercut is the phrase of the day today, I guess. You could do a supercut of all the droid humor and turn it into like a sitcom, just a Star Wars battle droids, a sitcom.
Oh yeah. I mean, they do are pulling from these traditions, right? Of kind of early silent comedy and early talkie comedy. There's a lot of dropping and in sudden pain. Things that maybe weren't even intended as jokes that really made me laugh. I love how much, even before there's a ton of evidence that R3 is a literal problem, how much Anakin just hates him for not being R2. And early on that Trandoshan ship, when R3 has already screwed up, but when Anakin says, R3 can't even open a door.
Yeah.
Just the delivery is so childish.
R3's over there like, joke's on you, fool.
I'll be able to open a door when it gets you killed, dude. I love that delivery of R3 can't even open a door.
Yeah.
Useless. And then this weird line from Grievous when he is trying to convince R2 to go along with things without fighting and says, we're all droids here.
Yeah, right. I love that. Like, wow. Are you? Like, you? Wow. He wants it. That's great. I'm there. I'm supporting Grievous's desires to be who he wants to be. But I love that line too.
Yeah, he's the droid leader. Does he see himself as a droid, or is it just really bad? Like, you know, he's normally, I think what made me laugh is he's normally like just like barking orders and, you know, threatening death and hacking and both in with the lightsaber and with his lungs. And then he tries this moment of like, I'm like Count Dracula, right? I can be suave like Count Dooku. What? We're all friends here, right? Yeah.
I like it.
Very, very funny. We talked about big sort of thematic connections to Star Wars, but any other favorite sort of connections to canon or lore to other stories?
Yeah, there's one shot, a little sequence there of just Anakin on a med table. Is it super intentional, super deep? Does it mean and everything? No, but just seeing Anakin there, knowing where he'll end up, have a medical droid over him there and just see the journey. And we're only a couple years away from that for him and his life. That got me, it affected me, it reached out and I saw it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good one. It's a good emotional canon. And I think they do have like a little reader on his actual mechanical arm. So there is even something kind of mechanical
Yeah,
about what's happening to him. I had forgot that there were IG units in this episode, and I liked that they were set up to be like they are impressive and frightening. So I was so excited. Like, I had vague memories that they were a little flippy, but I was really happy to see how flippy they were. It's not quite the same thing as the IG in IG 11 in The Mandalorian, but it does have some relationship to like they look stiff and weird, but then all of these joints and hinges move in these surprising flexible ways. I was happy to see that sort of connection of like, I can see a visual connection between these IG droids and IG 11.
Oh, totally. They talk on that Disney gallery about the process, but yeah, I can totally imagine at some point someone in Filoni, I'm sure too, but to go, oh yeah, back here we did this. And I liked seeing it, a little bit of consistency. And again, it's not exactly the same. You're right. But it's totally the spirit of it. And I like that.
Yeah, it's creepy, good action moment of Anakin and Ahsoka fighting the IG units. There's a ton of great stuff in these episodes.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the actual lore of the Clone Wars itself, I'm really wanting to listen to Tom Kane's narrator tell us what's going on. I had also forgot how much in this early season, this first season, it's all these Outer Rim campaigns. The philosophy and those tactics that the Jedi even talk about of, well, early in a war, of course, what they want to do eventually is take Coruscant. But the best way to do that is to hem us in by controlling the Outer Rim. So there's this huge battle for the Outer Rim. And I like how much that every episode, if you can just watch it and you know, enjoy the individual episode. But so far, almost all the big battles all hinge around this battle between the Republic and the Separatists to control the Outer Rim.
Oh, totally. I want that chapter of the Ken Burns documentary on Star Wars, The Outer Rim Sieges, and what it means. And which I, you know, I'm curious to see in the High Republic, too, of just when that's unsettled and undiscovered a bit, and to see those folks out there and to connect it to, you know, do they feel important? Because the Republic feels you're important when it counts.
Yeah, exactly. When it counts. And right now it's counting. The other thing for me is just really, really being clear about Gold Squadron. You know, it's said a couple times, and you know, it's one of the reasons that that Ahsoka names R3 S6 Goldie. How did you feel about the Gold Squadron of it all?
I love those traditions. I love Obi-Wan Red, Anakin Gold, and hey, that means he's somehow tied to the Y-wings. I do love a good squadron named after a color. Including Gray Squadron, the underrated squadron of Return of the Jedi, right?
Yeah,
I like it. That's that right flavor of the right spice to the soup.
Yeah, agreed. It is not too much for me. Let's talk about anything we disliked or questioned or wrestled with. What do you got?
I just said I questioned. This is a good way of question of how, and it was more in the second viewing of just like, how did Grievous get a droid spy in the Republic? And I made the joke earlier, like, I guess you could go through Sheev. They don't say that directly here, so I could see that. But I liked it. It made me think, like, how has this happened before? Like in the story, not in terms of anything we've heard or read or anything. Just like, it got me thinking about it. Like, okay, that's a really good plan. Maybe you can do it the other way around, and also just playing on. I'm sure Obi-Wan's not the only one who's like, R2 units, R3 units, whatever. These astromechs are nothing. They're just pieces for a bigger puzzle. And playing upon that. And just, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a lesson too for Obi-Wan too. Well, if you paid more attention to who's all on your team here, you might have been able to suss this out sooner.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah, I had fun thinking about, like, I wonder if there was ever any thought to do a prequel to this of how did Grievous get R3 S6 into position? And yeah, we were talking about in the Malevolence arc, how often Dooku or Grievous are just like, hey, by the way, Sidious, this little wrinkle in my plan. Could you like, you're thinking that early in the war, Sheev is fielding a lot of calls. So maybe there's that. Could also see if, like, you know, they got that listening station and they know certain positions. If there is like, oh, did they hire a bounty hunter, you know, to do some espionage and sneak this droid into the rotation somewhere? Like, who knows? It's an interesting question.
Yeah, and that's it. I didn't dislike it, just questioned it, and I love when sometimes questions become fun thoughts.
Yeah, and that's a great thing of, like, we've talked about this a decent amount on main shows about when is tip of the iceberg storytelling pleasing, where you're like, ooh, that lets you imagine it, and when is it so... when is it distracting? Because you feel like that's a fundamental answer that is needed for the narrative. And I didn't feel like it was needed. I feel like it's a fun revelation, and I didn't need a flashback of how Grievous pulled this off.
Yeah, agreed.
For myself, I think early on in season one, there is a lot of use of repeated lines from previous Star Wars, sometimes to great effect to me and sometimes to not. And I've got a bad feeling about this being in both episodes jumped out to me. Particularly, I kind of joked about it of like, yeah, Anakin, you should have a bad feeling about it. Right. There's a big piece of, you know, a shrapnel that's about to cause your ship to, you know, explode and knock you out. You should have a, I don't know, I've got a bad feeling about this as a premonition, not like, I just got hit in the head with a baseball. I've got a bad feeling. Like, the bad thing happened. You should have a bad feeling about it now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Never thought about it from that point of view. I just broke my arm. I got a bad feeling about this.
Well, you should. It's literally, yeah. Being a little hard on it. But I think that is one of the things that disappears as well. Let's talk about Obi-Wan. I want to hear your thoughts on Obi-Wan. I think for me, I try to be clear about it because I really do love Obi-Wan as a character.
Yeah.
And I like him having flaws. And I think there are times in the Clone Wars storytelling where we dive into his flaws. And then there are episodes like this where he, I don't know, to me, he feels like a bummer hologram where he pops up to have sort of like to be a little maybe overly strict. And I get that that's his character. I guess there's nothing I disagree with. I think it's his character to be like, hey, I follow the Jedi protocols. I follow the traditional thinking that the astromech droids they're great, they're valuable, but they're tools. And if they're tools that if you use the wrong way, they can become very dangerous to us. I think his perspective is while leading more with his head than his heart is valuable. But there can be a certain amount of in some of these episodes where it's just like, dad who doesn't get it, it's going to call you again and lecture you.
Yeah, no, I love Obi-Wan too. I'm number, you know, two or three or four in the depth chart of loving him to your number one position here. But, I think we talk about the lessons that you do need to learn from these characters. And I think there are times he is positioned a little unfairly in the Clone Wars series. He reminds me of a boss I used to have towards the end who just was like, he just drove me crazy because every time he called, he was calling to be mad at me and upset but it was hard to argue back or defend myself because he always went to the letter of the law in terms of our company or policies or the way it should be done. And it was hard to say you're wrong.
And yet he was wrong.
Yet he was wrong because it was the brain over heart type of thing there. And I think Obi-Wan's got some of that in place. And I think some of that, he is a human from Stujon. Does he not bleed like us? He, you know, does he have to kind of protect himself because, you know, his heart breaks thinking of Satine. And sometimes it might just be easier to deal with that kind of emotional trauma that he experienced there, whatever it might have been, to be like, no, I'm doing right. I'm doing right. And again, he's not wrong, but is it a protective thread? You know, maybe he loves R2. Maybe he just absolutely loves it. He just wants to break down and cry, but no, a dime a dozen. I don't know. This is, you know, just not necessarily what's on screen, but me just thinking about this character that I love to give him a fair shake. Cause otherwise, yeah, there are moments where he is just like, now, let me tisk you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to me is I don't actually have any criticism of what's presented on screen. I think what's presented on screen is, you know, a part of his character, and some of it is a different perspective from Anakin. Some of it is wisdom that Anakin should have listened to. Some of it is not seeing the strengths that Anakin and Ahsoka do have that maybe he doesn't always have. So I think it's all legitimate stuff to make a compelling character. But that is coming from taking all of the storytelling of Obi-Wan into account. And if you just watch the episode, sometimes it can feel like Anakin and Ahsoka are about to have ice cream. You want to see him eat ice cream, right? Well, here comes Obi-Wan as a hologram going, don't eat ice cream. He just can feel like a stick in the mud if you just look at this one, you know, specific episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But I did like, and I will go on my defense of Obi-Wan. I really did like that the conversation starts so positive where Obi-Wan is trying to be flexible and does compliment Anakin on his resourcefulness. And I'm always amazed how you think outside the box and you really get great results. But then I think there must be just such concern about Anakin going too far outside of the box where Anakin's like, great, now that you complimented me on that, got this other thing I know you're not going to like to tell you.
Yeah, because there's an exchange up top of the Ahsoka's kind of, you know, being Ahsoka and suggestions and things. And Anakin, does Obi-Wan have that you should listen to your Padawan? And Anakin kind of swipes back at him like, oh, like you did. I don't know. I just love all the stuff. Obi-Wan knows Anakin. He knows where it came from. He maybe even has feelings of where he's going. And so I think a lot of it from Obi-Wan, it truly does come from a protective standpoint. And I will always respect that.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you. I think that's an important context that he knows that there's a lot on Anakin's shoulders. He knows that Anakin has been through a lot and he wants the absolute best for Anakin in his own life and in Anakin's sort of path through the traditional way of being a Jedi. And I think Obi-Wan is often trying to just help keep Anakin on that path while also trying to respect, like, yeah, I know you do things your own way and 99% of the time it works out great, but you get that vibe of like, I'm really worried about that 1% Anakin.
Yeah. Yeah.
As he should be. All right. Enough of the taking a break from the podcast to go all Obi-Wan, which is a thing I think listeners understand they're in for when they listen to Force Center. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
Music we mentioned, I'd put that, I want to make sure I mention it here. So we have mentioned it. Glad that's there. I just really like the vibe, but it's fun. R2, going back to R2 a little bit, just putting a little exclamation point on it. Just R2, man, he just, when George reveals that at the end of Revenge of the Sith, I just remember thinking like that just recontextualizes a lot of scenes and just makes me love them even more. That this droid had a bigger mission and adhered to it. And, you know, that just makes a lot of the scenes from the original trilogy make more even sense to me. And I understand when my friend Mark Ellis will pound his fist on a desk and say R2-D2 is the greatest hero in all of Star Wars. And episodes like these, not just for what he does, but what he knows. And this is, as you said, a literal tug of war over his knowledge. You know, hey, cheers to you, R2.
Yeah, no, I will second that because I think that you can go through and nitpick Anakin's motivations, but this big overall idea that R2 is more than the sum of his parts, that there is something luminous about him for lots of different reasons is really celebrated in this episode. R2 does, he is, you know, exactly doing the right things. He is fighting back and he has that great battle at the end where you just feel like, oh, R3, you don't know who you're up against. If this right. is going to come down to whipping out the various droid parts and shooting each other, R2's got you beat. And he does in that cool little duel of the droids actual battle, which is a great fight scene as well. So we are going to move on to closing our episode as we always do with some fun questions. If you could have a figure of any character from this episode, Ken, who would you want?
You just said it. We need the R2 and R3 battle pack.
Nice.
And I thought for a second, I was like, well, maybe they already have. And occasionally you and I suggest a toy and one of our listeners is very helpful and says, hey, here's the toy. It exists. Go get it. But I do want that. And all appendages come out, you know, it comes on a little, walkway playset.
Oh, yeah.
I want that.
Yeah, no, that's a great one. Absolutely. R2 with all appendages and working electricity to just shoot out. I keep wanting three packs, two packs or three packs. I want a three pack of the Trandoshan Ghanakht with two of those cool IG droids, a little weirdo and two creepy, scary droids.
Yeah. Comes with its own bottle of stink spray just right there in the package.
That's right. Just like that old He-Man action figure Stinkor.
And then the other one I want to say, it's not a figure, but we need some merch. I do want a Droid Poppers cereal. Pour yourself a bowl of Droid Poppers, kids. Crunch your way through the battle. No battle droid will get you with your breakfast.
I can see this commercial where the action figures, the B2 battle droids, fall over as you crunch into the droid popper.
Yeah. Wow.
That is absolutely great. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. In our next episode, we're going to be talking about the season one episode, which I'm really looking forward to because I have rewatched it recently, Bombad Jedi. That will be an interesting discussion of comedy and nobility in Star Wars. Ken, as always, we like to close out with the moral of what the this episode of the podcast should be. What's our podcast episode moral?
Our podcast episode moral is trust in the gear around you, droids and all, for they will get you through the day. I have a lot of faith that these, every time I press record, it will take me to the finish line. Not the greatest moral I've ever come up with, but I'm just thinking about, as I look at my gear, I need all of this to work, and therefore it needs me. Just as much.
That's right. I trust this microphone. I do not want some weird replacement microphone. I trust this microphone. Where do you want to tell people where they can find us and all that good stuff?
Yes, sir. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. To join the conversation, use the hashtag Force Center. And don't forget to like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram and YouTube. Subscribe over there. We are going to be doing this thing where we're kind of going to be rebroadcasting the news from our podcast, just putting the audio version up there, hopefully to find more ears. But also, we know a lot of you do enjoy listening to things on YouTube as well. And we get asked that a lot, whether we ever fully go on YouTube consistently with videos and all that kind of stuff. That's a discussion for another time. But for right now, head over there, check on all those things we got going on there. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us at patreon.com/ForceCenter as well. Podcasts available in a lot of different spots. Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. As always, you can go follow us on our own sites, kennapsock.com for me. I'll try to update you on potentially new live virtual remote shows very soon. You can follow me at kennapsock and Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for comedy albums, my other podcast, Obsessed, all that. And if you like weird fantasy comedy, be sure to check out Tigtone. It's an Adult Swim show that I have been a writer for season one and season two. All of season one is now on HBO Max, and season two premieres on Adult Swim at midnight this Sunday, September 13th. So if that sounds like the kind of thing you might be interested in, go check it out. But for now, this is it for our Clone Wars report. For myself, for Ken, for R2, Ahsoka, Rex, and even for that stinky Trandoshan, this has been the Clone Wars report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.